All right, we are back for episode 152 of Digital Divination.
Hooray!
Yeah, and unfortunately, Jason had a dog emergency.
I think both of us are very, very forgiving for dog-related emergencies. If he's like, "Oh, I'm got an emergency for myself, or I've got an emergency for my wife," I'd be like, "Come on, Jason, you gotta go. Whoa, dog emergency? Never you mind. When you can get back, please come back. But until then, Godspeed."
But it's not his dog, he said. So I think it might be, you know, he does a lot of fostering at the shelter there. And so maybe they've had like a last minute issue or, you know, weekend kind of thing come up. So
did you see he was on TV in his local station?
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yeah, he was on a news article about, you know, good people who come in and help foster dogs over the holidays. And I'm like, well, that is just the place for Jason Keeley to be.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun to see.
Very cool. Very cool. So it's Ron and I, just like the old days. We should do this like, just like we should catch up like the old days. How was your New Year's?
It was good. I was a little sick. I'm still recovering a little bit.
Yeah.
But part of the reason I didn't recover as fast is because I worked hard on the New Year's. We got my wife's parents gave us an outdoor garden shed for Christmas that I assembled. It was frankly, it was exactly the same shed that they bought for themselves about two and a half years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe only 1.5 years ago. And they're, you know, they're a little bit older and I'm kind of handy. So when I was out there, they're like, "Hey, we bought this shed. Can you put it together for us?" I said, "Yes, I'd love to, you know, make myself useful." And just about the time I finished putting that shed together, my mother-in-law says, "Oh, actually, you know, since you're going to be here for another few days, we bought another bigger shed and it's supposed to arrive tomorrow. Could you also assemble that for us?" I'm like, fine. So I'm the shed guy now.
Yeah.
And what did they give us for Christmas? A copy of one of the sheds they have. So I certainly knew how to put that darn thing together. And it went together pretty fast. But because it went together so fast, I'm like, well, I'm feeling a little under the weather. But you know what? It is about time to scoop out the chicken coop and put in new straw and bedding and get all that done and take all the scoopings and put them in our garden to kind of rot and make good compost and stuff like that. So that was an awful lot of physical activity. And by the time I was done with that on New Year's Day, I'm like, that was a mistake. So dragged myself to work on the 2nd. But other than that, it was a very productive. I look out my backyard. I'm very happy with what I see, but took a lot out of me. How about you? How was your New Year's?
I was recovering from being sick as well. I think that's one of those things going around. My daughter and her boyfriend were down from Vancouver, and they stayed until yesterday. So that was kind of nice. We had them through New Year's and whatnot. The main bathroom you all use when you come here to visit, that sink has been leaking. It had been dripping for the last couple months, but not so bad. Except that over the last 12 days until today, my wife and I were able to use our upstairs bedroom again because my wife's aunt went to stay with her daughter for that time period. Yeah, so for 8 months, we've been living in our base. 8 of the 15 months that we've been here, we've been living in our basement because the aunt's been upstairs and we hadn't used the bathroom. Well, we started using it more and it started dripping and dripping more. Oh, it was driving me crazy. So finally, we bought a new faucet at Costco, and New Year's Day, I spent the whole morning tearing out the old faucet and putting in a new one, crawling under the sink and getting all bruised up on the cabinet and stuff. But I'm so happy that drip isn't just going and going.
That's nice. Yeah.
But I've been busy doing other things. I have this long adventure that's due end of this week. So I got to get that done.
Due Friday?
Yeah, due Friday. It's due Friday. Okay. And then I start teaching in Tuesday. So, you know, I had my winter break and so it's getting real. It's getting back to work again. I haven't had to drive anywhere or do anything. Hardly at all, except for gaming, you know, down in Redmond and stuff with y'all. So that's been about it.
Well, that's nice. Don't go back to work right immediately, or you don't go back to teaching right immediately, right? Don't you? Your classes are midweek?
A Tuesday.
Okay. So that's not bad.
Not Monday, but Tuesday.
Well, that means Monday you got to be writing this this long, long assignment.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've gotten, so it's kind of a three-part assignment. And actually, one of the things I want to talk about today is kind of writing these long form adventures, because I've written mostly shorter things. And in fact, even while I was working on this longer thing, I wrote three other shorter adventures in term. But now I'm getting back to, I got to finish this big one. And it, this contrast between, you know, something that's, you know, say 5,000 words or 10,000 words to something bigger that's like 30 to 40,000 words, it's a completely kind of different animal. And so I thought we could talk a little bit about how you go about writing a kind of a long form adventure that, you know, you might have a month or 2 months to knock out.
Well, let me tell you, I'm all ears. And the reason I'm all ears is because I had written a ton of different long form adventures while I was at Paizo. But 3.5 years ago, coming up on 4 years ago, when I left for Wizards, I couldn't do any freelance. While I was at Wizards, I did a lot of design work, and the adventure contributions that I had were parts of bigger adventures, like one 10,000 word chapter I did in the Vecna adventure, for example. And since I left Wizards and came back to Paizo, I picked up a little bit of freelance, but that's all been shorter stuff. It's been, I think the longest thing I picked up was an 8,000 word adventure, and that's falls right into the short adventures. Right. And then particularly, even though my job at Paizo is to manage, two of the four people that are doing our very long form adventure paths, they have stuff that was in flight when I, because these are months and months in duration, right? So they have stuff that's been long in flight. And I'm now advising at the front end of one that's just getting started and doing like a review of ones that's just finishing up. But I haven't been in the writing. To the extent I've done writing, it's been to catch up some of the gaps we've had in the short form sort of Pathfinder Society. And that's all, that's only 5,000 words. So, John, I'm all ears when you're saying, here's how to do the long form ones. I'm like, I'm almost 4 years out of practice and could use an update.
Well, I'm not going to say how to, this is just more my experience with it in contrasting. Cause you know, the most recent adventure I wrote before this for Paizo was a 10,000 word adventure for Society Play, which is the last of the longer ones for Society. Cause now we're down to 5,000 words, 5,000 word adventures for Society. So it's been kind of interesting experience, you know, starting from, you know, writing an extended outline for it. You know, I got from my, developer a pretty comprehensive kind of, here's a list of the story beats that they want. Here's some of the things they want, we want to happen. And basically this three chapter adventure that you're writing, and from there, you know, to flesh out the parts. And so for me, one of the first things I had to do is kind of figure out what I wanted to have happen to the players in each of the sections, and kind of, you know, here's where they're starting, what are they going to be like at the end of it, you know, so what's the end point? Okay. Right.
So, how do you get them from point A to point B?
Well, yeah, not the how to get them there yet, but what was point B going to look like for them? So then I could start filling in how they got there. You know, so I knew, right from the start of the adventure, this is the level they're at. This is where they're at. Well, at the end of the first chapter, I know they have to be at this level and they're going to be somewhere else. So I needed to kind of knock that down, what that meant, and then figure out, okay, I wasn't given specific location, so where do I want them to be? And then kind of what route were they going to take to get there? So, you know, so that's kind of the first thinking I did. So I ended up spending a lot of time just thinking about the different chapters for doing this. And then I went through and did, encounter budgeting.
Okay.
Right. So roughly for each level that you go through an adventure, you need about 1,000 experience worth of encounters that are
maybe 1,100 or whatever. Right. But right. Right around 1,000,
you know, to make sure you do that. And that could be hazards and creatures, and you can have experience for other things. So they say, okay, so given this budget, you know, I want to break that up with some trivial things, some low to moderate things, maybe, you know, a severe thing, not too many extreme things, but maybe there's going to be a almost something that is a plot point, a plot creature that, yes, I'll stat up, and yes, they could try to tackle it, but that's going to be an extreme challenge if they do that. And I'll have to give them an out too, possibly, for something.
Well, I don't want you to go into a lot of spoilers, but is it sometimes the case when you're fighting something that is tougher than you ought to be able to handle, that the adventure lets you be kind of smart and pick up things that give you sort of an unfair advantage against that extremely difficult encounter. So you can be like, maybe this is winnable after all, because we're very well prepared. Do you do that?
Well, yes and no. I provide information for, going back to how I started, I kind of built out all the encounters, all the hazards, right? Because for me, that's like doing that, and then the actual stat blocks, that's one of the most time-consuming parts. So that's the first thing I did for all my chapters, is build out all the stat blocks. So I build out my encounters and build out all the stat blocks. So I had kind of the major beats for each of the chapters. Now what I'm doing is I finish up, and I've done this for the first two chapters, and I'm getting to the third chapter, is kind of filling in the details of the story, of the other things that they encounter that foreshadows things that come later. And it kind of, as you allude to, if you're going against something that's very challenging, well, maybe if you succeed at something earlier in some knowledge area, it gives you some bonuses or benefits or leg up on other things that you have to do later on. That's kind of, you know, kind of what I've been doing. And that's actually kind of fun. As I go back, and I always like, I would go to the beginning of the story and go straight from the beginning all the way to the end of the chapter, you know, when I came back to it, to see where I was, and then to kind of continually smooth it out, right? To get the flow, right, going all the way through. And like I noticed in working on the second chapter that, I make this jump from one thing to this other thing, and there's no really good connection. So I introduced an NPC to make that nice connection there, do some foreshadowing, provide the player some additional information, which helps flesh out the overall story, explain, you know, some of the lore and things like that. And that's kind of like the fun part now, where you're just, you know, you're not having to do as much research. You kind of have this idea. Now you're just like, I'm filling in the gaps here, building the lore, having looked up all the major things and put it in there. Now I can kind of connect it all. And that's kind of where I'm at now this last week, is doing all the final connections, and I get to do treasure. And you get a treasure budget.
That's the part that always took what I found kind of tedious, actually.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, because it's good to hear, because making appropriate connections from one part of the adventure to another is that's like the 300 level or 500 level adventuring, right? Because people who know how to build monsters can build monsters, and they can even build an encounter around monsters. But what's going to be sensible to go from encounter one to encounter two, and then encounter three, or, here's this thing we learned that makes encounter four feel like a natural flow. That's something that takes a little bit of skill to be able to do. And, you know, like when you're playing, you know, when it doesn't work, but it's hard when you're writing to make sure that it does work. my inclination is to sort of over prepare the players, right? Make sure they've got almost too much information, because I assume that they're listening half the time and checking their phone the other half of the time, I guess. But that sort of those sort of connections are not only really important, they reward the players who've like tried to ask everything, or, you know, maybe we ought to go talk to this NPC before we leave town or whatever. Right.
Mm. Right. And that actually, that's one of the things I've had to do, is go back and pull kind of representative adventure paths. So some older ones that were kind of in the same location where I'm at, and then some newer ones, which are, you know, so remastered ones that are used, because there's actually a different style. I didn't even realize this. There's a different style of writing, phrasing for things between the pre-remastered and the new remastered, outside of the differences in stat blocks.
I'm still learning this. Yes.
Yeah. You know, so like, for example, you know, I'm reading an older one, and this is just a couple years old, where we're talking about the heroes this, the heroes that. And now a newer one that recently came out, it says the PC's this, the PC's that. And so it's like, wow, that's kind of interesting.
If you now, let me let you peek behind the curtain.
Yeah.
If you were reading the heroes this and the heroes that, it was probably something that I developed. Because
yes,
I dislike, was it something I developed, like String of Thousands or something like that? Yeah.
Yes.
Abomination Vaults. I dislike PCs. I think it's too jargony. D&D doesn't use it. They use characters. They don't use that abbreviation. Yeah. We're sort of stuck with NPCs, but I think that PC is not approachable. Even if you're writing a high-level adventure for people that you assume have a lot of familiarity with the system, I like heroes or characters or part. Like, I don't like PCs, so I will change it. Nobody's told me not to change it. But I know that, for example, people have been doing this a really long time. Like, James Jacobs uses PCs all the time. I'm developing something that I'm giving another pass of something that he has developed, and I have to hold my fingers back from changing PCs to heroes all over. I'm like, this is not my jam. This is the James Jacobs jam, and he wants PCs. He's getting PCs.
And I was actually reading something written by him that
where
I was using
as PCs.
And I was like, I was all set when I read the old one to say, okay, I got to do a find and replace for PCs, because my initial guidance talked about PCs. It was PCs this, PCs that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, so that's how I started writing it. And then I'm reading this old one, I think, oh, wait a second, they use heroes. So I was all set to do a find and replace. So I said, well, let me go look at the more recent ones. And it says PCs. I guess it's okay. So, and then the remastered stuff is always, you know, stat blocks and all that.
Well, spells, and I keep getting chided on a lot of little things. I had in something short I was developing, I had what I thought I had corrected. You know how we've got, here's what's going on, maybe some box text, some description, and then creatures, colon, and then the creatures, and development, colon. That's what happens after a fight or after a trap or something.
Right.
And maybe even treasure, colon, which is actually physically tangible stuff. And then if you get extra XP for doing a thing or finding a thing, or you get, you know, mythic points or whatever you get, that was reward, colon, in the thing I was looking for. And I'm like, I'm going to correct that to be story award or what's the other, XP award or something like that. So I corrected it, and then the editors came back to me and said, no, that's not right. We don't do that anymore. Reward is correct. And then my boss explained to me, with as many different things as that are ephemeral, they're not treasure, maybe it's points that you earn for a subsystem. Maybe it's mythic points in a mythic adventure. Maybe it's extra XP. Maybe it's renown. We've just standardized that to reward, colon, being all those things that aren't treasure. And I didn't know that. I'd done it wrong, and that was how I...
That's good to know, because, again, that hadn't been explained to me, but seeing it in the writing, knowing that, and that's one of the things I'm going through now, is adding rewards or adding XP for things, adding my, you know, there's a subsystem in throughout the entire adventure path. There's a subsystem where I'm adding rewards for that. You know, so there's a lot of, it's fun, you know, I'm looking at my word count for things, and then I realize I have to add all these other things. So I need to take that in account for my word count. So,
yeah.
But so that's kind of, you know, that overall way is again my first long form adventure is kind of how I've been doing it. What I'm left with now is kind of, you know, finishing the connective tissue in like the third act, which that's the most work I have to do now. Then making sure my foreshadowing all the way through, right? That's the other thing I go back to make sure the foreshadowing all the way through is tight, right? So that it makes sense and I foreshadow things early on when certain things happen that are relevant later on. And then I don't leave any hanging foreshadow, so to speak, you know, like that. And then I have to make maps. And that is that is going to be Jessica Redekop actually did a freelance map design thing for us. And she's really good. And I was like, wow. Apparently she's doing some for that other company you used to work for because people like her map making skills so much. So she kind of gave some pointers and it's like, wow. So I have to make a bunch of maps, but luckily they give me word count equivalent to make maps.
Is a picture worth 1,000 words?
No, it's only worth 500 words. Each map is worth 500 words.
But keep that in mind, because however much time it would take you to write 500 words, some people can only get 500 words in an evening.
Right.
That is not just how much you're getting paid for the maps. That is how much time you should allocate to actually do those, because they'll take that time.
Yes. And that's part of one of the reasons why I can't play Tuesday night.
That's fair.
Because I'm going to be spending, you know, I kind of have the maps roughed up, but I'm going to spend basically 2 days, you know, one full day and part of a day finishing up the maps, you know. For doing that. Because of all the things I have going on, I don't know if I have enough maps now. So, you know what I'm saying? I have like, I have 6 full page maps, but now I'm going to have like a full page map is going to have broken up into 4 sections so I can do all the things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, kind of.
If you do more than 5, and I'm kind of famous for, I get a full page of maps, and I'm going to put 8 encounters on it. Let me break it up into 8 different subscripts. People don't like that. The map programs don't like that. VTTs don't like that. So.
Right. Yeah, I don't think
I've learned my lesson.
So anyway, so that's all the stuff I got to. It's kind of I've kind of done the big bulk of things, but now it's all the finishing touches. That's kind of time consuming as you're trying to wrap but it's not fast.
Let me ask you a thing that I've found and see if you found this to be true. When I've gone back in order to make sure all my connective tissue is solid in something I've written, short form or long form, it always takes more words than I expect it did. So in a lot of cases, I'll be like, oh, I've hit 90-95% of my word count. I'll throw in the connective tissue and then I'll be fine. And then I look, I'm like 110, 115, 120% of my word count. I'm like, oh boy, this took a lot more than I expected. But now I feel like I can't cut it back because I've added it because it is of use to the players. So
yeah,
I should have been writing less in the first place. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't had to cut that much. I always have to cut some. But I don't think I've ever had to cut like more than 10% when I've been done.
Okay. Good.
But yeah, I mean, of all the, you know, I was kind of totaling up all the words that I've written now. And I'm like, around, not including conversions, I mean, I'm around 200,000 words, right? And so I don't think I've, on any of that, I've gone over 10%. You know, I think it's done. Let me go check the word count. I don't think I've been over 10% of that. But then it's hard. If you have, you know, so 10% of 40,000 is 4,000 words.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of words to then go back and cut. in ends up being more like I have to cut entire sections because I can trim bits and pieces and stuff like that. But yeah, to get word count down, you got to, you like, when I'm doing stuff like items and things like that, I will just cut an item or cut a spell or because that's the easiest way. Cause
right.
It's the economy is so tight and stat blocks and stuff that there's not a lot of extra words to cut out. For the adventure. Well,
unless you get to cutting stat blocks. And one of the things you can do is, oh, well, gosh, I had this, this bespoke giant that was two levels higher than a regular giant.
Right.
I guess I'm going to have to cut the whole stat block and just say two of the ordinary type of giant.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
And that's never, I've spent a lot of my time, and I don't know if listeners will hate me for it. Since I've come back to Paizo, I've spent a lot of my time cutting stat blocks because my attitude is, you have a bunch of stat blocks. They're in the Monster Core. They're in Monster Core 2. They're in Alien Core. Like, you got a bunch of stat blocks you're never going to look at. Maybe we should count on those a little bit more. And when you could use one or two monsters that are thematically appropriate and hit the right need for the adventure without having to use a bespoke stat block, we'll just cut and do something else. The NPC core has been particularly valuable.
I've used that for a bunch. One of the issues, and I think when I was doing it the last adventure, I think the guidance is one of the things that they've looked at for society adventures in particular is the inclusion of stat blocks in there to make it easier to run. I think it's different with the long form adventures because you have a longer time period. You can look things up, you can pull things out.
That's right.
And do things. But for the prep and running of a society adventure, having, even a non-bespoke stat block in there just makes it so much nicer to do rather than refer to that.
It's funny that you say that because we don't do that now. Like the new form of the society is if we're pointing you towards the Monster Core, the Alien Core, something like that, we're not going to put the stats in. We're going to trust you to go on Archives of Nethys, which is maybe not ideal, but it's there, or get your book to use that. And we've been hearing a lot of people saying exactly what you just said, because we had a lot of us who've been going out to conventions and asking people, what do you think about these changes? How, what else would you like to see? Where do you think we went too far? And so on and so on. And some of the feedback we've gotten is that people really like having all the stats, even for the non-bespoke ones, even the ones right out of the book, they like having them there. We hear that. Is that worth our time to do? Maybe. It's a lot of balancing. But yeah, it's to hear you say society runs easier when you're given all the stat blocks and APs don't need that. Hits on one of the things that we've been doing since my tenure started at Paizo, and one of the things we're still evaluating.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll have to see on that. Getting back to, what I'm working on now, especially, is very high level too. And to get thematically appropriate creatures is somewhat challenging because, thinking of, dungeon ecology, why is this super high level thing here in the first place?
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, I just did that with a creature. It's like, I have to tell a little story as to why it showed up here. It's great to have it here. It's really kind of cool. It's not its normal hangout. Well, why would it come here from where it would normally be? Okay, here's some things. And so that's maybe it's not a huge deal, but when I'm reading the description of this creature where it normally hangs out, it tells me, and I like the creature, it's like, I need to make a reason for it to be here. Other thing, normally I try to find stuff that kind of fits there, but when you're looking at things at very high level, there's not as many options.
Not a lot of options. A lot of high level stuff. And even though I had said, I want to cut a lot of the bespoke stat blocks. We don't need an ogre warlord when we've got an ogre boss, for example.
Yeah.
I am a big fan of brand new monsters. Let's just pack these things with brand new. People love brand new monsters because yes. a standalone monster entry, they can use a lot of different ways. And in a lot of cases, whatever level you're writing, but especially for high level, you're given the ability to write high level monsters right. for the bestiary in the back so that you can use them in the adventure. Have you been given, can you say, have you been given monsters?
I was early on in my original guidance, I'll say, I was told in my extended outline to provide some of the monsters I thought I would need that would go in the bestiary. Right. So in there. So I put some in there. Again, when I built my extended outline, I built out all my stat blocks for things. And I realized, I want something high level that's like this, that doesn't exist because of this environment or because of what's going on here, because of the story. We need something like that. And so, I submitted like a handful of those. I don't know which, if any, are going there. So I've essentially developed a bunch of them, though.
Okay.
Because I don't know.
Sometimes somebody else does those. One of my very first writing assignments for Paizo was for the Wrath of the Righteous Adventure Path. So many, many years ago, the Adventure Heralds of the Ivory Labyrinth. The author of the adventure had said, I need a bunch of, what was it, like CR-17, just total badass minotaurs that are, they're all about stomping people down and then crushing them once they've stomped them, and I'm not statting those up. Let's make it a monster in the back. And so my assignment was, make a monster in the back. It must be a minotaur that would live in Baphomet's realm that was like CR-17 and is all about stomping people down and, trampling them into paste.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got it. And at the time I thought, I sure hope the adventure author knows somebody's got this, right?
Yeah.
So they're not writing all those out because they don't think somebody, and they did. I mean, he was great and they're in there and you fight them.
Yeah.
So
anyway, so that's, I'm using kind of a mix of bespoke and reskinned and some, new kind of critters to fill in my, I think I did one particular new kind of NPC creature, which would be a extreme encounter should they decide not to just converse in there. I actually did two of them recently, and but one in particular I really like the vibe, the character, the background, how they interact, their story.
That's fun.
Like, yeah. So it's like, oh man, this would be so much fun as a player to come across this thing and interact. So it's like my favorite thing right now. And it's like, and I think,
that's exciting.
I hope they don't fight it, but I have, if they decide to do that, this is what happens. And it's not,
this is the stats and so on. Yeah.
So it's not a big deal. But it's like, I think that'd be, but I have a couple things like that are like, well, they should interact and work with, but they might have to fight. The players might decide to fight. And so here's the stat block for these things.
I love that. That's great to hear. Everything I've written, I have some part that's like, this is where my heart was when I did this. Yeah. And I love it. And that's a lot of fun here. Now you're 5 days away still from being done. So maybe it's a little early to ask this because you've got a hill to climb between now and then. But would you do it again?
Oh, yeah. This has been... I was warned by a pretty prolific freelancer who said, you don't want to do an AP.
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's not for everybody. Some people, they do one and they're like, that was a great experience and I never want to do it again.
Yeah. I've really enjoyed the whole process. And if it weren't for the fact that I had a lot of other writing I was doing, when I took it on, I had a 60,000 word conversion I was doing for somebody else. And then I also took on, as several other smaller adventures. And so I've been balancing these things. And so I look forward to being done because I have other things I want to do. But if somebody told me, I finished this up and somebody said they had something for me next week, I'd be all over it. I really
jump on it. Oh, that's great.
I enjoyed it a lot. And I know so much more how to do it better than the first go. Okay. Like it took me, several weeks before I figured out I should spreadsheet this whole thing I'm doing to keep track of it. Of all this stuff. And then that just made it. So I did that for my milestone. I actually submitted my spreadsheet with my milestone so that the developer could see, okay, here's all my encounters. Here's all the things. Here's my subsystem, where it's all going to go. And it's like, wow, this makes it a lot easier to see where the gaps are. And when I make changes, I go back to the spreadsheet to kind of show where the changes are. So very it's like, smart. Yeah, this is like, but if I had done that from the beginning, if I just built the spreadsheet first and then gone back and done it the way I did it, it would have been even easier.
Did I tell you my brother's written novels, including like a 7-novel series he's still working on. And Excel is his greatest tool, not Word, Excel, like knowing all the way through from the beginning, everything is planned out. What are the big people? Where are all the characters and when do they interact with other characters and are they present or not in a scene and what happens? And that's, he says that alone has made things so much easier for his writing.
I think my only concern right now is doing good maps. I mean, I think everything else I can do. That's the one skill I've been meaning. You know, I actually picked up some new custom map making software at Gen Con. I haven't been able to dive into it and use it. And it's like, that's the skill I want to get good at.
These are my custom map making software, the very good Micron pens.
Yeah.
I'm sure Jessica mentioned it, but the thing that surprises a lot of people when they talk about doing maps is to hear you're not making a map for the players. You're not making a map for the GM even. You are making a map for the cartographer. The cartographer will be the one to make it pretty. Your whatever you draw, whatever you prepare, needs to communicate with a cartographer, not with a DM on the other side, not with the players on the other side of that, but that first step. So,
So, but anyway, so that's kind of my goals for the next go around would be to get started on the maps earlier and to get better at them at making them. So that I didn't feel like, I feel very comfortable finishing everything else. It's like, oh, but I got these maps to do. And that's, that's like,
that's going to be her. Well,
that'll be,
I could show you my map. This is one of the harsh
truths about writing. Before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is one of the harsh truths. Like you will, at some point you will look back on the maps that you've done for this adventure and go, wow, those are garbage. Yeah. And that's fine. You're just trying as best you can now. And every time, like the writing, every time you learn more and every time you do better. And that's fine. I've got some of my old maps. I was looking through them just the other day. I'm like, wow, these are garbage. But I got better. Well, this is great. I also, encourage you to keep up talking to people. I've had some people reach out to me say, oh, hey, Ron, now that you're back at Paizo, I'm interested in doing freelancing. Other people have reached out to me. And might as well tell the listeners here. It's been months since I've been back. I haven't assigned anything. And I'm looking ahead at 2026. And my likelihood of assigning anything in 2026 is really low. That's just not my role there.
Yeah.
The developers that I work alongside, the developers that I manage, they are great at finding just the right people. I do not want to get in their way. So,
very cool. I will reach out again. I haven't done so for a bit because I've been, I have more work than I can handle at this moment. And I actually have another big thing coming middle of, I told them the earliest I could do it was middle of January after I finish this. So, and that potentially is massive. And I'll tell you offline a little bit more about that.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we'll keep that a secret from all of our listeners then.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, so this is my first experience with long form adventures, and I do recommend folks try it if they have, even on their own. You don't have to do it for a company. I'd like doing this because I want to do this on my own, and I think it'll be. This has been a really good experience for my own.
That's
in fact,
great.
This is helping me a lot when I think about our Daggerheart adventure, which is a long form adventure I'm building on the fly,
how you want to foreshadow things now for payoff in the future and structure.
Yes.
Have you done a spreadsheet for it yet?
I haven't. I have all these notes everywhere, but I've been doing a lot of foreshadowing. And I, one of the things I'm thinking of is when I'm done, I'm going to turn this into a campaign to put on basically a drive-through RPG for Daggerheart, oh, I think. Yeah, so oh, that's kind of, yeah. Because I look for things for our campaign frame, and there's no adventure, there's nothing like for us. So I've been doing it from scratch. Anyway, this is our segue into less Starfinder-related topic, but still sort of in there.
Long form, well, and let me tell you, as far as Starfinder writers go, the longest form long form writer so far is Michael Bramnick, who did the entire Guilt of the Grave World.
Yes.
So that's kind of the long form to aspire to these days. That's
yeah. I can't imagine. I haven't looked to see how many words that is, but I imagine.
Well, it's shorter, and
yeah.
I think that even though it's on this Pathfinder chassis where it's 1,000 XP per level, it's first through fifth, I want to say.
Okay.
So it is probably similar to the amount of words you've done.
I think it's probably closer to 60,000 is my guess.
Closer to 60. Well, because there's a lot of other stuff in there. There's a lot of kind of a player's guide, and there's a lot of rules in the back and new ancestries and stuff. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So. Very good. Well, again, Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to all our listeners. I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.